Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Margaret Fontana Media Podcast Show. And I am on a Zoom today as we're starting our expert series for the next couple of months. We did an expert series a few months back, and the feedback was overwhelming. We had everyone from media, film, TV, fashion. And today I want to welcome someone who I, follow online as well, who we cross paths constantly. She's in the media world, and I'd like to welcome our good friend, Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Margaret. Thank you so much for having me here. Like you said, we've crossed paths so many times, and I'm excited that we actually get to connect like this right now.
Yeah, and I was gonna say your full name, and then I thought to myself, let me have Laura actually pronunciate her last name properly, because I'm sure everyone always probably mispronounces the CH and the phonetics.
Yeah, it's not a tricky last name, but it's a tricky last name. I say it Laura Chavez. I say Chavez, but I'm not even remotely offended when people say Chavez or get it wrong, as long as they're open to me saying like, oh, I actually say Chavez, but I Chavez. Appreciate you. Yeah, I appreciate you taking a stab at it. So yeah, Chavez.
I love it. So welcome. And I wanted to kind of start this interview talking about who Laura Chavez is and what Laura does, and just kind of, really be able to give a little bit of context around film and media and all the different wonderful things that you're doing. And then we'll talk about all the different projects you've worked on and the relationship to digital media and how that relates to what's happening with this fast forward in digital right now. So tell me a little bit about who you are and how you got started in film and media and TV, because it's like kind of this umbrella that you're in.
Yeah, it's I pride myself in having a very diverse background. I live in Chicago, dominantly. I actually split my time between Chicago and Washington, D.C. for the most part. But I am currently in Chicago, and I went to school up here at Loyola University with a communications and a political science major, with the full intent of being a lawyer. And then I took one internship at WMAQ, which is the NBC affiliate, and I was like totally transformed. I was like, I love production, I love television, I love content development, I love all of it. So I abandoned pre-law and decided to double down on media. After that, I got my first job in Peoria, Illinois, just 3 hours south of where I am right now. I was an on-air reporter and weekend producer, which was kind of fun and actually gave a
lot. But I can see that. I can see that about you. You have like that journalistic vibe to you.
Well, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. Yeah.
Oh, it is.
I know sometimes for better, sometimes for worse.
Yeah.
So it actually was a great experience because it taught me both sides of the camera. I had to shoot a lot of my own stuff because it's a smaller market. So I got to get my hands on a camera, got to do my own editing, but I also got to, experience what it is to be saying a sentence with someone else saying something in your ear. So it was a really good experience. And then from there, I had a big jump in market all the way up to Washington, D.C., where I was there for about 10 years, and it was really just wonderful. While I was there, I was producing exclusively. I decided on air wasn't necessarily where I wanted to be, but I got to not only do news, but I was also the creator of the first lifestyle talk show that is exclusively for the DMV, as it's called, the District, Maryland and Virginia area, where I got to highlight a lot of issues for women, including stuff that spanned from like the everyday styling tips and makeup, but also to like breast cancer research and eating disorders, and taking kind of a deeper dive into and wage discrimination, and taking a deeper dive into what's actually like happening in the world, specifically with the point of view of a woman.
Wow.
After that, I decided to take a stab at getting out of news, which was a big jump, and I got a job at Red Arrow Industries in Knoxville, Tennessee. They are a great company and they taught me a lot. I was there for a couple of years, and then after that I decided I wanted to be a little bit closer to family and moved back to Chicago, where I am now at Exit 19 as the executive producer and one of the partners there. And we've got lots of fun things going on, and I've had a blast ever since.
Wow. So tell me about Exit 19. So Exit 19 is what would you classify it as a production company or like a multimedia? What do you guys focus on?
So we call ourselves a small boutique production agency. So with that, it essentially means that we are a pretty small group. We don't have, you know, hundreds of employees or anything like that. We do a lot of stuff with contract workers as well, because that's kind of where we started, in all honesty. Like, we went through a phase when we were just kind of trying to get to know, my partner's name is Jeremy, but when we were trying to get to know each other, where we were both contracting, you know, like I would get a gig and be like, I have a great DP for you. And he would get a gig and he would say, I have a great producer for you. And so after that, we decided, you know, it was an appropriate space. And we have a lot of really awesome clients. We have the luxury of not necessarily being super selective, but doing things that we really are passionate about. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that the show I created, it was Let's Talk Live in Washington, D.C. It was geared towards women and empowering women in every space we could. So we decided, like, what are the causes that we want to work with for nonprofits? We do still do corporate work, which pays a lot of the bills, you know? I mean, yeah. Everyone is happy to do a tutorial on HR software, but at the end of the day, it's not necessarily going to be the thing where you go to bed and you're like, man, I made the world a better place.
It's two different animals. You know, it's like, I work in the corporate world too. And you know, I'm usually the person working with the video production teams to say, like, you know, we have to figure out a way to put a story together that makes sense for a consumer. And it's not always the sexiest thing, but I will tell you that over the years, you know, I've had junior level production people and camera people that, you know, have learned, really, it's an amazing, like, foundation to work in corporate production, video production, because it really gives you a foundation to have a storyboard, how to work with people who, you know, on a film set, we'd call them difficult people. But in a corporate setting, you're like, those are the people paying the bills. It's like the executives. So there's always like these similarities, but to your point, you know, there's a good, great way to pay the bills. Exactly. You know, but it's quality. You learn a lot of those pieces in that area. So I hear what you're saying on that.
Yeah, and to kind of feed off of that idea of like a really solid foundation, I think that for all the like newcomers who want to get into film, who want to get into television, who want to get into this space of production, it is so important to make sure you learn your craft at as many levels as possible. Because I learned so much stuff from news in how to tell a story and how to tell a story quickly and the importance of deadlines and, you know, that kind of stuff. Then I went into this creative space with Red Arrow and I was able to really kind of have fun and use creative new shots and incorporate more graphics. And throughout my career, I've found that I'm constantly building more and more and more and more and more, which is a really great feeling. And it's something that I was able to do because I had this foundation where I learned to shoot, I learned to edit, I learned what it was like being on the front of the camera, and I learned what it was like in a control room and how to make things interesting. Because story is really the biggest part, in my opinion. Story is the heart of production.
Absolutely. So just backtracking, you said you went to Loyola. Is that what you said? Okay. Yes. So did you take like a film production, was that your major in college?
So I had a double major of communications and political science. I always told myself that I was going to be like a Supreme Court justice. So I wanted to be able to communicate and I wanted to know the value of words, which I thought was really important in the communication space. But I also needed the like background and the history and the general knowledge of civics that political science would offer. So I had those two as my major. And I just dove in headfirst. I'm still a political animal. I watch it, I consume it. I always have, even the boring stuff, like budget talks. I just love it. So yeah.
Well, and plus you're in Washington, D.C. as part of your other, like, you know, life. You're in Chicago and D.C. So I think it almost lends, that's why I said you have like a journalistic vibe, because it's almost like you can't help it. I mean, I think it's incredible. I watched the inauguration yesterday and it's so hard to watch TV because I'm always thinking about like the production side of it. You know, I'm thinking, oh man, they're switching over. Or you see like the reporter quickly putting thoughts together. And then she's like, you know, they throw over to some poor journalist off to the side and she's like, you know, putting it so eloquently together, but it's so fascinating, you know? And so you mentioned an internship, and I think a lot of times in a lot of different conversations I've had with different experts, people always ask like, how do I get into the business? Or how do I get into TV? How do I get into production? And how would you say your internship played a role in what you're doing now? I know you mentioned a little bit about it, but do you think that if you didn't take that internship, you probably wouldn't be where you are?
100%. So my biggest tip, and I give this to every college kid who I talk to, every high school kid, take the internship that no one wants. In your field, take the internship that nobody wants. What I did was I interned with WMAQ and WBBM. They are the CBS and the NBC O&O affiliates here in Chicago. But I interned for the morning shift. So my hours were like 1:30 in the morning until 8:30 in the morning. No college kid wants to be, you know, writing a ticker or, you know, doing anything other than sleeping or coming home from a bar for the most part at those hours. But I took those internships, and because of it, I had such an amazing experience. The crew was eager to get me involved. I actually put together my first reporter reel with several of the reporters here at WMAQ because they were excited to take me in the field. They were excited to show me the ropes. The photographers were excited to get me in front of the camera. They sent me into interviews that the daytime interns and the evening interns didn't get access to because I was willing to take, as you know, as a colloquialism that I've heard in the book, I was willing to take the suck early. And I've been able to just totally twist it. And I'm actually really good friends with some of the people still at the station. And one of them is my mentor. His name is Chris Selfridge, and he's the executive producer over at BBM still. And he's amazing. But he was one of the guys that was like, hey, if you want to know what it feels like to anchor, grab that IFB. It's one of our spares. Hop in. I'll let you see what it feels like. See what it feels like to read off a prompter.
It's so important to have, I would also say it's an important part to have the mentor. You mentioned a mentor, and you know, it sounds like without that one supportive person to really kind of like always give you the permission to kind of like, here, just try it, here, see what happens. Don't you think that's so important, is just to have someone if you're up and coming or if you're looking to get into the industry? Like the mentor is so pivotal to your mindset and your confidence, I think.
It is. It's one of the most important positions that you can take or that you can be to someone else, because it gives them almost like a permission to be vulnerable. Because the thing is, like in my case at least, like it's scary to get in front of a camera, but I had all of these people, especially, you know, people like Chris and Curtis, who were like, you know what, no, try it. There's no harm in trying. And just having that brave, having someone else tell me that it was going to be okay, that like no one was going to laugh, no one, and if they were laughing, I would probably be laughing too, because something would have happened. It was one of the biggest things that a mentor can do is create a safe environment.
I love that.
And I was very lucky that every mentor I've had has created a really safe environment for me to try, for me to experiment, for me to fail. And I think that's another really important thing that you can do early on in your career and throughout your, I'm still failing. And it feels great every time it happens because I know I'm one step closer to success.
Wow, I love that. So as part of a lot of your bios, you write story lover. And before you said a lot about storytelling, and I think an important part of, and these are things that like I touch on, you know, in a lot of the work I do, you know, I'm always like dropping these topics because it's just, there's so many moving parts to media, to telling a story, to putting a film together, putting a video together. What are your thoughts on stories and putting a good story together and really getting like all of your pieces together in order to produce that you know, that unicorn work that you're looking to do? Because I mean, so many people want to get to that, but I think telling a story and writing can be challenging.
Oh, absolutely. It is one of the hardest things to do, especially as you get to know the story, because you will fall in love. You will fall in love with your work, and it is the hardest thing to say, oh, I really got this great soundbite. It's beautiful. The person I was interviewing was so eloquent, but it doesn't fit. And it hurts to say it doesn't fit, get rid of it, cut it. But having that moment where you actually do just kind of boil down the story to what's important is magical. One of the things that for all of our clients at the beginning of a project, we send something called an exploration sheet to them, which I think has truly revolutionized the way that we do storytelling to make sure that we're conveying what our clients want to do, what they want to feel. And some of the questions are very, and we always say like, answer this in two sentences. Each question gets two sentences or less. Some clients bend the rules by making really long sentences, but you know, we always want to try and condense it down. But a lot of the questions are like really obvious ones, like, oh, well, what do you want to do with this? But at the, one of the questions that I always really love, and I'm so happy that we put it on there, is how do you want the viewer to feel at the end?
Oh,
it is, it's such an important question that people forget about, because especially when you're dealing with clients who, you know, the HR software stuff isn't super exciting, but how do you want the person watching to feel at the end of it? Do you want them to feel overwhelmed? No, you don't want that. You want them to feel like this is doable.
Right.
This is okay. Like, this is not going to take that long. You want to give them a sense of ease. So I think having those talks with clients and really helps boil down the story that they want to tell. And it helps us tell the story we want to tell, because that's also really important. If you're going to put something out into the world, you need to be proud of it.
Yeah.
There are levels of pride to all of the projects we've done. Some of them I'm like, oh, that was such a beautiful video. I encourage everyone to go watch the 60th anniversary gala video for Child Help. It was, it made several people cry, including myself. And there are other videos that I'm like, you know what? I'm proud of that, but it's not that other video.
Yeah.
So you always want to try and make sure that the story that you're telling is the story you're proud of, but also a story that your client's gonna be proud of, that you're making sure that the message is getting across in the best way possible.
Right. So, and then as we're talking about storytelling and like really producing these different video pieces, and I'm sure a lot of your clients also are asking, you know, hey, Laura, how do we take this video? And, you know, we really want to get the most out of our platforms, maybe even our social media platforms or our website. You know, what kinds of conversations are you having to talk about how to adapt, you know, like the traditional beautiful video or film into, let's say, the digital spaces?
Absolutely. I'd say the kind of conversations we're having are usually difficult. They're difficult conversations, because while you have also fallen in love with the footage and the sound bites, they have too. So they don't necessarily understand that if you're doing a 15 minute video, a 5 minute video, or something like that, that doesn't have necessarily a place in on Instagram, on TikTok, on Snapchat, on Facebook, you know, that kind of thing. I think knowing and have it, and I'm a huge proponent of knowing your craft and knowing your stats. I think knowing your stats is one of the most important things you can do, especially when you're talking with a client, because if you go to them and say like, hey, you've got a great 5 minute video, this is awesome, this will play on Facebook. On Facebook, people, you knowing your demographic, you know that it's now skewing a little bit older, people are willing to invest time on Facebook. If you're on Instagram, you have maybe a 1 to 2 second scroll to catch their eye. You don't wanna play a 5 minute video. You want to play something that fits in their Instagram stories, or you need to double down on an IGTV or an IG Live. Along those lines, knowing that information really does help put the client's mind at ease. It also helps put our mind at ease, because we don't want to be putting in a lot of work, you know, boiling down this 5 minute video to 15 seconds, knowing no one's ever going to see it. We want to take that 5 minute video, find the 15 seconds that's powerful, that's going to get everyone else to go see the 5 minute video.
Wow. And that is just the best piece of information you have given straight from the executive producer's mouth. Because, you know, I think to your point, yes, a lot of the conversations are difficult to say, yes, we understand it's beautiful. Yes, we understand that there's like this one part that you don't want to leave out. But a lot of times it's about kind of almost having an open mindset, because to your point, and then also to my expertise in digital, there's always these like changes inside of, you know, what the time frames are that you can actually use, vertical versus horizontal. And these are real things. They're not sexy things to talk about. And it's not something like anybody from a high level wants to kind of get into, because those are the weeds of, you know, the technical specs of how taking the beautiful product. And then, like, a lot of times I've been in meetings where people are like, you're not chopping up my work, you know, and I'm like, that's not what we're doing. But it does.
You're right. We're not chopping it up. We're maximizing its viewability.
Yeah. And I love that. So let's jump back really quick to talk again about the projects for Exit 19. I mean, I know you guys have a lot of stuff that you're probably working on that you can't really talk about from, like, you know, like a public perspective. But what do you see, like, on the slate moving forward with all the things happening in the world and, like, what people are coming to you asking you to produce? And is there, like, those are actually three questions. It's like, you know, what are you hearing about what people want to produce? And are there passion projects maybe for your company that you guys want to do?
Yeah, there are. I'll try and remember the three questions, but I'm going to just kind of go through my thing.
Yeah, like it's yeah. More of me just like thinking, yeah. And at, like, it's conversational, no worries.
Exactly. So we do have a lot of repeat clients, which we're always excited to have. We have a few clients that have been with us pretty much for years, and we are just like, they are everything to us. They are mostly nonprofits at that space, and to which we are excited about that. We often work with companies like Child Help, like I mentioned, the Nora Project. We have most likely a project coming up with WeCoach, which is actually a company that I helped with the rebranding of it a few years ago. So go to their Instagram page, check it out. They've got a beautiful logo. The color scheme's amazing. They have been an amazing client when it comes to reshaping their social image. But we also have a couple passion projects that we're excited about. There are a few projects that unfortunately are under embargo, so I can't actually talk about them. But we're actually going to be dipping our toes into some original content, which is really exciting for us. We hadn't expected to get into original content for a few more years, just because it is kind of a weird space. It's a weird time. But we decided that, you know, no time like the present. There's a couple passion projects that we think are really timely right now that will hopefully, you know, just make people smile and make the world a little bit of a better place. So we're hoping to, you know, get some traction with those. We're gonna hopefully be filming those in the first round of filming in the next couple weeks. And then hopefully by spring, we'll be taking something to town.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. And so Laura, just to kind of like get everyone to follow a lot of what you're doing in the different work. So where can everyone find you online, and where can they find the company and maybe drop like your handles so we know?
Of course. So all of my personal socials are at Producer Laura. That way it's easy to remember, and, you know, people can find me pretty quickly. And then I did the same for Exit 19 when I got there. Essentially, I decided we need to consolidate and make everything match. It is just exit19.tv.
Okay.
So yeah, if you...
That you got the .tv
URL. We did. We got the .tv. After a fair amount of research, we looked at the benefits of actually owning the .com and the .tv and the like dot everything, and the metrics showed that .tv was actually going to be the most cost efficient for us. So we were like, let's go for it.
Yeah. There's so many like benefits to all of these newer. See, and this is part of like that technology discussion. Yeah. Just things keep changing. So Laura, I want to thank you so much. And Laura Chavez, executive producer, Exit 19. And Laura, you've been amazing. This is a great conversation. I also want to, you know, ask you as we progress into the spring, you know, maybe join me for an Instagram live or a Facebook live. This way, like, maybe we could do a little bit more Q&A in real time, and we can gather all of the folks in our network to, you know, maybe join in on our conversation.
Absolutely. I would love that. I think that sounds like a fun idea.
All right. So we're going to continue I think we should do another couple of these like over the next couple months too, just because you touched on so many different topics where I'm like, I don't know, I want to talk more about like what you said. So, and we're not going to be able to fit all of it right now, but I just want to say thank you again. And we're going to be putting this out on the Margaret Fontana Media podcast show. It's going to be on YouTube and all of the social channels. So check it out. And Laura Chavez, Exit 19. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you.